Sir Jefferson is telling us, at least he's telling his descendants, that he is in fact wearing a mask, trying to obtrude from us a view of this, the perhaps tormented or stormy emotions that lie within. But certainly the greatest challenge in dealing with Jefferson are the obvious contradictions, both in legacy, career, and character. And these are obvious. He's a slaveholding libertarian. He's an anti-slavery racist. He's the champion of democracy, the West, rusticity, and the simple agrarian life. Yet in reality, he's an aristocrat. He's one of the descendants of the first families of Virginia. He's one of the largest slave owners in Virginia. And he's an extremely refined and elegant gentleman. When he arrives at the Continental Congress, it's not riding a horse in threadbare homespun. Jefferson shows up in a coach and four with a liveried slave riding postillion. The very image of Jefferson is conflicted. On the one hand, the Houdin portrait, bust we have here suggests a bold and stirring figure, one best expressed in the language of the Declaration of Independence, where we pledge our sacred honor on behalf of the principles of American freedom. And his prose is stirring. On the other hand, he's a guy who's mortified of speaking in public. As John Adams recalls, maybe twice, three times, he raised his hand to speak in the entire Continental Congress, and then never more than a single declaratory sentence. When he delivers his inaugural address, one of the great stirring pieces of American rhetoric, no one can hear him beyond the first two rows. He mumbles to himself. He's terrified at the thought of speaking in public. So we have on the one hand this bold, stirring figure with bold, stirring rhetoric. On the other, a very shy, demure man who is described by many of his contemporaries as effeminate in manner. One congressman describes the way he sat when he first met him. He sits hunched up on one hip with his legs crossed and his arms folded akimbo with his shoulder up. It's a very sort of fey posture. And there's a real tension here. And finally, the most famous tension, no one who meets Jefferson is not charmed by him. No one who meets him is not immediately attracted to him. Abigail Adams describes him as the only person with whom my companion, John Adams, could associate with perfect freedom and unreserve. On the other hand, Jefferson has been charged with deceitfulness, with duplicity. And in fact, when Abigail Adams learns that he hires a paid hitman to write horrible calumnies against her husband during the election of 1800, she ceases to correspond to him. She ends their correspondence stating, "This was the sword that cut asunder the Gordian knot of their friendship." Okay, so how are we going to get at Jefferson? What we're going to do is track him in his writings, because that's where he leaves his tracks. That's where he lives, in words and ideas. We'll compare those writings to each other over time, and to those of his contemporaries, but most importantly, we'll also compare them to the realities within which he was situated. And we look for two things. We look first for evolution, for change and development, but also we look for what doesn't change, what is the consistent core of Jefferson's character and beliefs. So what I want to do in the rest of this lecture is look at Jefferson's childhood and early life and development. We're going to look first at his childhood, his relationship with his parents. Then we'll turn and look at his education, both at the grammar school level and at the university level, and the way he interacts with people in that period. Understanding Jefferson's childhood is itself a real challenge, and I've mentioned some of the reasons why. Jefferson doesn't want us to see his childhood. He tells us almost nothing about it. However, he did share information with his grandchildren, and they later told biographers. So one of the important sources of our information about what Jefferson's childhood experiences meant to him come from these reminiscences, which were finally recorded in the mid-19th century. Now, Jefferson's father, Peter Jefferson, was a member of the lesser frontier gentry. He was born in 1708, the son of Thomas Jefferson Jr., our Tom Jefferson is the third, who was also a lesser gentleman, but whose father, Tom Jefferson Sr., was in fact a yeoman who had moved to the West and raised his family status up by seeking a better future in the frontier. What we know of Peter Jefferson suggests that he was a very large and powerful man. He was an important figure in what was at the time Goochland County, would later become Albemarle County. He held a variety of local offices, and he hobnobbed with what was at the time probably the first family of Virginia, the Randolphs. He made very close friends with William Randolph and married William's cousin, Jane Randolph, in 1739. 4 years later, on April 13, 1743, Thomas Jefferson is born. He's the eldest son of Peter Jefferson. 2 years later, they'll move to Tuckahoe when William Randolph dies, and Peter Jefferson decides to raise both families.